Chapter 1. March Fundamentals. Troop movement is the movement of soldiers and units from one place to another by any available means. ADP 3-90. This is inherent in all military operations. Successful movement places soldiers and equipment at their destination at the proper time, ready for combat. Troop movements are made by different methods, such as dismounted marches, mounted marches using vehicles, motor transport, air, rail, and water means in various combinations. The method employed depends on the situation, size, and composition of the moving unit, distance the unit must cover, urgency of execution, and condition of soldiers. It depends on availability, suitability, and capacity of different means of transportation. This chapter addresses dismounted marches, commonly referred to as foot marches. It discusses integrated planning and preparation activities for foot marches. See FM 3-90-2 for information on other methods of troop movement. Section 1. Dismounted marches. A dismounted march is a movement of troops and equipment mainly by foot with limited support by vehicles, FM 3-90-2. It is also called a foot march. Foot marches are characterized by combat readiness, ease of control, adaptability to terrain, slow rate of movement, and increased soldier fatigue. Foot marches do not depend on the existence of roads. March mission. A foot march is successful when soldiers arrive at their destination at the prescribed time and are physically and mentally able to execute their mission immediately. Physical and mental conditioning are normally done through unit conditioning programs and acclimatization of soldiers to an area of operations, AO. A foot march depends on control of units during movement. Such control is accomplished through the chain of command by proper supervision and organization of units. Movement of soldiers over extended distances has extensive sustainment considerations. Commanders must determine the amount and type of equipment carried and rate of march. Length and number of rests equates with soldiers' physical endurance. Detailed planning and leadership must move soldiers and equipment to the right place at the right time, ready for combat. Commanders ensure soldiers arrive in good condition to accomplish their mission. March units should receive notification of an impending move early enough to allow for planning. When necessary, conducting a forced march can hurry foot marches. Forced marches require speed, exertion, and more hours marched per day. This is normally accomplished by increasing marching hours for each day rather than the rate of march. Forced marches are employed only when needed, since they decrease unit effectiveness. See Chapter 2 for additional information. Shuttle marches alternate riding in vehicles and movement by foot during foot marches. This normally occurs due to an insufficient number of vehicles to carry the entire unit. Shuttling transports soldiers, equipment, and supplies by a series of round trips with the same or different vehicles. Alternatively, shuttle marches may haul a load an entire distance, then return for another, or may carry successive elements of loads for short distances while remaining elements continue on foot. March classification. Troop movement can be administrative or tactical. The three types of troop movement are administrative movement, tactical road march, and approach march. Administrative movement. Administrative movement is a movement in which troops and vehicles are arranged to expedite their movement and conserve time and energy when no enemy ground interference is anticipated. ADP 3-90. An administrative movement, whether dismounted or mounted, is only conducted in secure areas. Normally, once units deploy into a theater of war, administrative movement is not employed. See ATP 4-16 for additional information. Tactical movement. Commanders use tactical road marches and approach marches to relocate units rapidly within an AO to conduct combat operations. Tactical road marches are useful when contact with the enemy is possible. Approach marches are useful when contact is anticipated or intended. The approach march emphasizes tactical considerations such as security and de-emphasizes efficiency and ease of movement. Both the tactical road march and approach march emphasize speed and security over tactical deployment. The commander organizes the unit to conduct combat operations in tactical movements. Units generally maintain integrity throughout tactical movements and plan for enemy interference either en route to or shortly after arrival at their destination. When units conduct tactical road marches or an approach march, they use formations and techniques consistent with the mission variables of mission, enemy, terrain, and weather, troops and support available, time available, civil considerations, MET-TC. Units may conduct tactical movement, primarily the approach march, over unsecured routes if there are no friendly forces between the forward elements of the moving force and enemy. When relocating in an AO, units may conduct tactical movement by dismounted or mounted march, the movement of troops and equipment by combat and tactical vehicles, FM3-90-2, or in combination. This occurs prior to maneuver when speed is vital and security requirements are minimal. Units generally move by this type of tactical movement to an assembly area where units prepare to conduct combat operations. During these types of tactical movements, commanders must be prepared to maneuver against an enemy force. Once a unit is deployed in its assigned AO, it normally moves using proper movement formations and movement techniques for assigned missions. When contact is made, maneuver is executed. See Chapter 2 for additional information. Section 2. General considerations for the march. Visibility, climate, weather, and terrain characteristics to a degree determine actual arrangement and location of soldiers, equipment, and vehicles within a given march formation. Additional considerations common to the conduct of marches include march discipline, water discipline, acclimatization, non-United States military participation, morale, individual load, and risk tolerance. Visibility. In the absence of enemy threats, marches during daylight hours are preferred as they permit faster movement and are less tiring for soldiers. Marches during daylight hours are characterized by dispersed formations, ease of control, extended lines of reconnaissance and security, and increased vulnerability to enemy observation and air attack. Marches during limited visibility are characterized by closed formations, difficult command and control, reconnaissance, security, and a slow rate of march, but they do enable concealment from observation. Marches during limited visibility exploit darkness or weather factors to gain surprise and help units avoid extreme heat common to marches during daylight hours. March control, especially during conditions of limited visibility, requires detailed planning, stringent control measures, and thorough march training, signals, and communications disciplines. If concealment is required, movement before dark is restricted to small detachments. Marches should be completed by daybreak with soldiers in concealed positions. When movement is near the enemy, security, noise, and light disciplines are strictly enforced. Units must enforce security to conceal operations from the enemy, preventing it from gaining information about the march. Navigational aids, command and control systems, thermal sights, and night vision devices can prevent many command and control problems encountered during limited visibility movements. Marches during limited visibility require careful planning. This includes reconnoitering routes and assembly areas. Special precautions ensure direction and contact within the column. Therefore, guides and file formations, see ATP 3-21.8, are needed. See Chapter 2 for additional information. Climate, weather, and terrain. When conducting a foot march, climate, weather, and terrain have the greatest impact on off-road or cross-country movement. Restrictions imposed by climate and weather extremes and terrain constitute major changes from operations in temperate areas. These restrictions can present major obstacles to operations without the establishment of proper provisions. Climate and weather. Climatic conditions, produced by temperature, humidity, precipitation, wind, and light in an area over an extended period, influence long-range plans within an AO. Weather, the local day-to-day condition of the atmosphere, impacts daily operations and is always a key planning consideration. Foot marches in adverse climatic and weather conditions follow the same principles as in normal conditions. Differences depend on physical limitations imposed by adverse conditions and the use of special equipment required to overcome them. See Appendix F for wind chill chart information. Cold climates reduce efficiency of soldiers. Bulky clothing limits movement in performing maintenance and operational duties. Hot, humid climates reduce energy and increase physical discomfort and the likelihood of disease. Over time, heat and high humidity reduce life expectancy of all equipment, adding to maintenance, repair, and replacement problems. Rust and corrosion are accelerated. Mildew rapidly attacks unprotected clothing and leather products. Climate and weather extremes affect the daily maintenance and operation of vehicles. Low temperatures require the protection of cooling systems to prevent freezing, fuel additives to prevent frozen fuel lines, and protection to make starting easier. Tire life may be reduced, metals may become brittle and break. Batteries lose their efficiency and may freeze or crack. Severe freezing may require extensive road repairs after each thaw, particularly in early spring. Extremely high temperatures may increase the number of breakdowns due to overheating. Terrain. Terrain evaluation is the study of how soils, vegetation, climate, and landforms help or hinder employment of military units and equipment. Movement planners evaluate terrain to determine the ability to move soldiers, vehicles, and equipment without interruption and with minimal exposure to observation and direct fire. Terrain evaluation considers all factors of the operational environment, OE, in relation to capabilities and limitations of tasked equipment. Sources of information, techniques, and results of terrain evaluation vary with the OE. Terrain evaluation at unit level informs the selection of the most suitable route to accomplish the mission under prevailing circumstances. Varying types of terrain over which soldiers must march present different problems for commanders, depending on the specific AO. Weather conditions combined with terrain affect mobility of marching soldiers. Movement must be calculated in terms of time and distance to determine the total amount of time soldiers need to move from one place to another. This applies mainly in Arctic, mountain, or jungle environments, where trails are either limited or non-existent, and where cross-country movement can be arduous and slow. Rise and fall of the ground is known as slope or gradient, grade. Slopes of 7% or greater affect movement speed along routes and are considered an obstruction. Percentage of slope is useful in describing the effects that inclines have on movement rates. It is the ratio of change in elevation, vertical distance to horizontal ground distance, multiplied by 100. Note, when planning routes, commanders should factor elevation gain and loss as much as distance into their movement timelines, as effects of slope on dismounted movement is significant. See ATP 3-34.80 for additional information. As the percentage of slope increases, movement rates decrease due to increase in energy and physical demands needed for movement. Moving to the same exact location using an indirect route can help reduce the amount of strenuous energy needed, but increases the time needed due to the total amount of terrain traversed. Movement rates decrease whether units are moving uphill or downhill. Slopes covered in talus, a more stable slope formed by large rocks, often proves to be relatively easy ascent routes. On the other hand, climbing a scree slope, a slope formed by landslides consisting primarily of loose dirt and small rocks, can be extremely difficult, as small rocks tend to loosen easily and give way. This characteristic often makes scree fields excellent descent routes. Before attempting to descend scree slopes, commanders should carefully analyze the potential for creating dangerous rock falls and take necessary avoidance measures. March discipline. March discipline includes observing and enforcing march instructions, including formation, distances between elements, speed, and the use of cover and concealment. It must include specific controls and restrictions such as water, light, noise, and communications disciplines. March discipline is the culmination of training, which results in effective teamwork between all soldiers of the unit. Maintaining discipline is especially important. All commanders must ensure soldiers understand and follow established rules of engagement. The principle of proportionality requires that the anticipated loss of life and damage to property incidental to attacks must not be excessive in relation to the concrete and direct military advantage to be gained. This principle, as well as the principle of unnecessary suffering, may restrict the use of certain weapons, munitions, or techniques during operations. March discipline is a command and individual responsibility stemming from organizational control and training. It is essential for march columns to prevent conflict with other movements in the area. Thorough training, supervision of operations by technically and tactically proficient, competent leaders, and attention to detail attain it. March discipline demands using qualified soldiers and drivers who operate their equipment safely under a variety of conditions. Adhering to unit standard operating procedures, SOPs, specifying tactics, techniques, and procedures for movement, battle drills, and communications techniques. Strictly following traffic regulations. Meeting start point, SP, and route checkpoints, CPs, and release point, RP, times. Following prescribed routes at prescribed march rates. Halting at rest stops for the required amount of time. Using protective measures, including maintaining prescribed intervals, radio discipline, and blackout driving at night. Maintaining proper care of equipment. Maintaining correct weapon posture. Observing safety policies and regulations at all times. Ensuring soldiers and drivers obey rules of the road, traffic laws and regulations, speed limits, and time and distance gaps. Note: the reference to drivers may imply soldiers, United States government contractors, or host nation contractors. Water discipline. All soldiers must observe water discipline to maintain effectiveness and minimize fatigue while conducting operations. Water discipline mandates several rules. Consume water or electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids before, during, and after foot marches. Do not overhydrate. Drink treated water or electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids from approved sources. Drink small quantities of water or electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids rather than gulping or rapid intake. Drink water or electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids when not thirsty. Drink water or electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids slowly to prevent cramps or nausea. Refill canteens with water only or replenish electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids at every opportunity. Note: never pour electrolyte and carbohydrate fluids into water canteens or hydrating systems. Mold and mildew tend to grow within them, causing sickness or health issues. Use bleach to clean canteens or hydrating systems that appear to have mold and mildew. Never force hydrate with water alone. The body needs the proper amount of nutrients and electrolytes to operate efficiently. Force hydrating with water alone can flush electrolytes and nutrients out of the body, causing overhydration and impairing performance. The human body does not operate efficiently without adequate liquid intake. When soldiers are engaged in strenuous activities, excessive amounts of water and electrolytes are lost through perspiration. Water is also lost through normal body functions, such as respiration and urination, which can create liquid imbalances in the body. As a result, dehydration could occur unless the loss is replaced immediately and soldiers rest before continuing their activities. Insufficient liquid and salt intake during hot weather can result in heat injuries. Danger of dehydration is as prevalent in cold regions as it is in hot, dry areas. The difference is, in hot weather, the soldier's body loses liquids and salt through noticeable perspiration. In cold weather, when soldiers are wearing many layers of clothing, they have difficulty realizing this condition exists since perspiration is absorbed rapidly by heavy clothing or evaporated by air. Salt in food compensates for daily salt requirements. Additional salt intake should be under direct supervision of a physician or physician's assistant. If pure water is not available, water in canteens is treatable with water purification tablets. See TC4-02.3 for additional information. If units must traverse a chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear, seaburn, contaminated area due to the tactical situation, water consumption increases and forced hydration becomes necessary. Commanders and subordinate leaders at all levels must prevent heat injuries brought on by physical activity in seaburn environments by adjusting march rates or loads. Acclimatization. Soldiers must be physically and mentally conditioned to participate in foot marches. Many types of terrain and climates throughout the world require different acclimatization for operations. Ideally, soldiers should be trained to operate in all areas with minimal preparation. However, each area has specific preparation requirements. For example, Soldiers scheduled for operations in mountains normally participate in high-altitude training for 10 to 14 days before engaging in full-scale mountain foot marches. Altitude acclimatization. Soldiers may be deployed to theaters of operation at altitudes in excess of 2,439 meters, 8,002 feet, above sea level. Altitude acclimatization allows soldiers to decrease their susceptibility to altitude illness and achieve optimal physical and cognitive performance for the altitude to which they are acclimatized. Altitude acclimatization has no negative side effects and does not harm health or physical performance upon return to low altitude. However, soldiers with good aerobic endurance may acclimatize more quickly and perform better than those with low fitness levels. High mountain environments are dangerous and unforgiving for those without adequate knowledge, training, equipment, and acclimatization. Commanders, subordinate leaders, and medical support soldiers must understand interaction of environments, individuals, and unit characteristics. Adequate planning and preparedness can reduce or prevent significant problems. Leadership is vital to safe operations in high-altitude environments. See Chapter 3 for additional information. Cold weather acclimatization. Psychological adjustments eliminate preconceived notions and fears about specific cold weather locations and climates. Training conducted logically and realistically causes most soldiers to lose previously held fears of cold or isolation. Adjustments are facilitated by educational and training programs that gradually introduce soldiers to unfamiliar terrain features or cold climates. During these programs, soldiers are encouraged to develop confidence until they can operate in cold weather environments with ease and assurance. Self-confidence in each soldier is a direct result of psychological adjustments. Self-confidence in foot marching in any environment is developed by strong leadership and progressive training. As soldiers become stronger and learn and apply marching techniques, their self-confidence, morale, and pride increases. Commanders stimulate pride by building unit spirit and by instilling determination to succeed. A well-planned and conducted march is an excellent way to develop and demonstrate many attributes of good soldiering. Heat acclimatization. Physical work and training programs for unacclimatized soldiers should be limited in intensity and time. About 2 weeks of progressive heat exposure and physical work is appropriate for heat acclimatization. Heat acclimatization is necessary for all soldiers. However, fit soldiers may acclimatize to heat more quickly than less fit soldiers. Full effects of heat acclimatization are relative to initial physical fitness levels and total heat stress encountered by soldiers. Soldiers who perform light physical work achieve the level of acclimatization needed to perform certain tasks relatively quickly. If soldiers conduct strenuous work, they may need additional acclimatization. Less fit soldiers have reduced work capabilities in heat. Furthermore, middle-aged soldiers often have lower work capabilities than young adult soldiers, and female soldiers often have lower physical capabilities than male soldiers within the same categories, either fit or less fit. However, if their physical fitness is sufficient and they are heat acclimatized, less fit soldiers should have similar work capabilities. When conditions allow, heat acclimatization requires a minimum exposure of 2 hours per day, which can be broken into one-hour exposures, with some activity requiring cardiovascular endurance. For example, marching can replace push-ups and resistance training. Gradually increase activity intensity each day, working up to an appropriate conditioning schedule adapted to the present environment. Resting in heat with activity limited to minimal requirements results in partial acclimatization. Soldiers must perform physical activity in heat to accomplish optimal acclimatization for work at the intensity level in given hot environments. See TB Med 507 for additional information. Non-United States military participation. March commanders are responsible for all non-United States military supporting assets associated with the march. These supporting elements can comprise multinational partners, United States civilian contractors, host country nationals and local national contractors, and host nation force augmentation. Multinational partners. March commanders must practice diplomatic and cultural sensitivity, show respect for multinational forces, and treat them as partners. Their rules of engagement may differ from United States rules of engagement. Their equipment capabilities and limitations may also differ. Every effort must be made to ensure multinational forces are an integral part of the team and accept an equitable share of risk. March commanders must ensure battle drills are articulated clearly, understood, and rehearsed. Ensure logistics support is provided to multinational forces during march missions. Define the chain of command clearly. It is important to determine and communicate who is in charge of the march during planning, preparation, and execution. Integrate multinational vehicles fully, if applicable, into the march and maintain organizational integrity. Plan for possible communication system incompatibility and develop alternate communications plans. Plan for communications problems due to differences in language and dialects. Determine if interpreters are required, and if so, how many. Refer to the chaplain, staff judge advocate, contracting officer, civil affairs officer, and intelligence staff for additional information about cultural differences. United States civilian contractors. The law of armed conflict imposes strict limitations on use of civilian personnel in combat environments. Department of Defense, Service, and Commander guidance dictate policy, limitations, and restrictions for civilians supporting military forces. March commanders must be aware that contracted drivers will likely be unarmed. Civilian vehicles have different capabilities and terrain limitations than tactical vehicles. March commanders should disperse civilian vehicles throughout the march due to security and limited communications capabilities. Contact and coordinate with contractor points of contact and leadership before the mission. Develop habitual relationships with contractor personnel. Provide an internal communications plan to contractor personnel. Conduct risk evaluations for safety considerations such as licensing, vehicle condition, and load. Incorporate contractor personnel into pre-combat checks, PCCs, pre-combat inspections, PCIs, and battle drill rehearsals. Host country nationals and local national contractors. March commanders must take into consideration contractors who may not speak English and proportionally increase the number of interpreters when necessary. March commanders should consider cultural and discipline differences between civilian drivers and possible implications on the march. These can impact vehicle crew mix. Depending on situations, the march commander should consider removing all host country national communications capabilities to limit security breaches. March commanders should conduct thorough inspections of all host country national equipment and personnel. Ensure host country nationals are familiar with the unit's tactics, techniques, procedures, and SOPs. This increases the need for multiple rehearsals. Provide additional military escort vehicles and armed military assistant drivers as needed for marches, with large numbers of host country national drivers as an additional security consideration. Host nation force augmentation. Host nation forces have the advantage of being in their homeland, where they know more about the country, streets, routes, laws, situation, terrain, and culture than organic forces. They are a valuable resource for understanding terrain in particular areas and can help save time and energy while planning and conducting operations. Host nation forces often have robust human intelligence capabilities since they know the terrain, local populace, and customs much better than United States forces and can often spot something that does not look right more easily than United States personnel. Commanders and subordinate leaders should understand host nation force capabilities and limitations and use them to their advantage accordingly. Commanders should consider combined operations from the augmenting force leader's perspective to better operate alongside them. Key points for commanders to consider should include ensuring host nation leadership personnel participate in the planning stage of operations, ensuring host nation forces participate in rehearsals, PCCs, and PCIs, attaching United States advisors to host nation force leadership and embedded trainers, if available, to ensure the augmenting force understands and is prepared for missions. Commanders should consider host nation forces and personnel may not have the same standards or disciplines as United States forces and may not perform in the manner expected of United States soldiers. Using liaison officers with necessary communications equipment and communication security in order to ensure host nation forces can receive communications when utilizing secure communication protocols. Ensuring the attached host nation force understands the expected reaction to enemy contact battle drills to avoid fratricide. providing United States forces for logistical support to host nation forces when mission variables permit, employing host nation forces within their capabilities. They often do not have the same capabilities as United States soldiers and units. Intermingling host nation forces, dependent on the situation, with own unit while conducting missions such as foot marches. Host nation personnel often look to United States soldiers for actions and guidance. Establishing effective relationships with host nation forces based on personnel rapport and trust built by key leaders. Using host nation forces to help in foot march missions like clearing traffic and avoiding potential ambush sites. United States forces may be restricted in entering certain areas, while host nation forces can often enter these areas with fewer limitations and without incident. Morale. Morale can greatly affect soldiers during foot marches. Low morale can be contagious and magnify any discomfort soldiers might experience. Commanders and subordinate leaders improve morale by applying leadership and emphasizing proper foot march techniques, some of which are to provide advance warning of an upcoming march so soldiers can prepare adequately. Hold formations early enough to allow time for inspecting soldiers and performing last-minute checks. Avoid delays during foot marches that keep soldiers standing for extended periods. Delays can increase fatigue, causing legs to stiffen and making it difficult to resume the march. Route reconnaissance before the march provides information on conditions that can cause delays. Advance action can prevent conditions that can cause delays. Maintain a steady rate of march. Too rapid or too slow rate induces fatigue. Hold passing vehicles to reasonable speeds during marching to promote safety and to prevent dust, rocks, or mud from being thrown on soldiers. If dust conditions are severe, move soldiers to the upwind side of the road. Do not allow trucks used to transport stragglers or foot march casualties to overtake columns unless it is unavoidable. Ensure soldiers in rear formations receive full break times. Ensure leaders at all echelons march with their soldiers throughout the entire foot march. Soldiers quickly detect the presence or absence of their leaders in foot marches. Encourage unit leaderships to walk their entire march formation, periodically spot-checking soldier performance, well-being, and to ensure command presence is observed. Ensure availability of adequate water at rest stops throughout the foot march. Medical evacuation, medevac, and casualty evacuation, CASEvac, have positive impacts on morale. Medical evacuation is the timely and effective movement of the wounded, injured, or ill to and between medical treatment facilities on dedicated and properly marked medical platforms with en route care provided by medical personnel. ATP 4-02.2. Casualty evacuation is the movement of casualties aboard non-medical vehicles or aircraft without en route medical care. FM 4-02. Casualties are cared for at point of injury or under nearby cover and concealment and receive self or buddy aid, enhanced first aid from Combat Lifesaver, CLS, or emergency medical treatment from a trauma specialist or unit medic. During planning, commanders and subordinate leaders, in coordination with unit CASEvac procedures, outline procedures for medevac. Key medevac considerations include ensuring organic medical personnel accompany each march element, coordinating air and ground medevac support, rehearsing medevac operations with air ambulance flight crews, rehearsing medevac operations with ground ambulance crews, placing ground ambulances strategically in direct support of each march element, identifying ambulance exchange points along march routes. In situations in which medevac assets are either limited in number or unavailable, commanders must plan to conduct CASEvac operations. These are usually accomplished through the use of organic vehicles. In situations in which organic vehicles are not available, it may be necessary to request vehicles from supporting units. Additional CASEvac planning considerations may include rehearsing CASEvac operations with designated CASEvac platform crews, identifying equipment to be carried by designated soldiers in each march element includes compact and lightweight casualty transport systems, VS-17 panels or other marking equipment, including night marking devices, mobility equipment such as rope and carabiners when applicable. Individual load. To prevent an individual load from hindering a marching soldier's mobility and combat readiness, The commander identifies the minimum of mission essential equipment to fight and survive in the immediate combat operation. The primary consideration is not how much soldiers can carry, but rather how much they can carry without reduced combat effectiveness. A unit's combat strength cannot be based solely on number of soldiers. It must be based on the number of soldiers physically able to perform their duties. Soldiers become exhausted quickly when under combat stress. Soldiers must have the capability to carry heavy loads and quickly adjust to a tailored fighting load that allows agile movement in combat. Individual load must not be based on equipment and supplies needed to meet every possible contingency. The commander should not expect soldiers to carry equipment for all possible combat situations. Instead, items contained in loads must be based on realistic expectations. Unit SOPs may be used to provide a standardized fighting load and approach march load, see Chapter 3 for additional information, based on common mission requirements. The commander is responsible for tailoring fighting and approach march loads based on specific mission requirements and obtaining means to carry additional gear. Usually, an infantry rifle company or a smaller unit requires one truck and one trailer to carry additional gear. In cold weather, or during other conditions in which personal gear requirements increase, this requirement increases. The commander ensures the supply system provides the balance of essential supplies and equipment not carried by the unit. Soldiers must feel confident their mission essential needs are being met. When operating under austere conditions, the commander sets proper standards regarding soldier fieldcraft techniques in the use of caches and other field expedient measures to sustain the force. Risk tolerance. Commanders must ensure a thorough understanding of the operation, including the senior commander's intent and risk tolerance. A commander receiving a mission will analyze it and assign subordinate missions. The combined risks identified for these additional missions and tasks may modify the overall residual risk for the mission, possibly to a higher level than the risk tolerance. Risk management, the Army's process for helping organizations and individuals make informed decisions to reduce or offset risk, is addressed in Chapter 3. Section 3. Planning for the March. Planning is the process by which March unit commanders translate their visualizations into specific courses of action, COAs, for preparation, execution, and focus on expected results. Planning to determine relationships between the mission variables of MET-TC begins with an analysis and assessment of the conditions in the OE, with particular emphasis on the enemy and terrain. Planning involves understanding and framing problems and envisioning sets of conditions representing desired end state. Based on the higher commander's guidance, the March commander's planning includes formulating one or more suitable COAs to accomplish the mission. Planning continues with assessment throughout the operations process, as needed during preparation and execution. March commanders rely on intuitive decision-making and direct contact with subordinate leaders to integrate processes and activities during the planning process. Note, see ATP 3-21.20 for details on conducting the operations process, specifically the military decision-making process within the battalion. See ATP 3-21.10 and ATP 3-21.8 for details on conducting the operations process, specifically troop leading procedures, within the company and platoon, respectively. Key components of planning. The March unit's mission statement, commander's intent, and concept of operations are key components of a plan and serve as the framework for an operation. Commanders and staffs ensure their mission and end state nest with those of their higher headquarters. While the commander's intent focuses on the end state, the concept of operations focuses on ways or sequences of action by which forces achieve the end state. Additional components to the plan include the March unit's task organization, tasks for subordinate units, coordinating instructions, risk acceptance, and control measures. The concept of operations expands on the mission statement and commander's intent. Within the concept of operations, commanders may establish objectives as intermediate goals toward achieving the operations end state. When developing tasks for subordinate units, commanders and staffs ensure the purpose of each task correlates with the accomplishment of another task, achievement of an objective, or direct attainment of an end state condition. Commanders and staffs use operational variables to analyze and understand the OE. Operational variables describe military aspects of an OE and the population's influence on it. Planners analyze an OE in terms of 8 interrelated operational variables: political, military, economic, social, information, infrastructure, physical environment, and time. PMISI PT. Commanders, staffs, and subordinate leaders use the mission variables of METTC to focus on specific elements of an OE during mission analysis. Upon receipt of a warning order, WARNORD, or operation order, OPORD, commanders and staffs filter relevant information categorized by operational variables into categories of mission variables used during mission analysis. Commanders, staffs, and subordinate leaders use mission variables to refine their understanding of the situation. The tactical situation is defined through the mission variables of METTC. See FM 3-96 and Echelon and Formation Specific Maneuver Center of Excellence Army Techniques publication for additional information. Environmental conditions. Environmental conditions must be taken into account when planning a foot march. Key environmental conditions to consider during movement planning are addressed in the following paragraphs. Mountainous areas. Steep grades are common in mountainous areas. Proper selection of formations for an operation enables continued movement without halting. Soldiers must be extremely careful at all times in vicinity of sharp curves and dangerous grades. Uphill or downhill grades should be traversed carefully. When entering short, steep grades, soldiers may build up momentum on the approach, so the added momentum carries them over it. Use caution to ensure safety. Units moving in a column must guard against bunching on approaches to grades and curves. The slow movement of columns in mountainous areas makes soldiers vulnerable to an enemy attack at natural obstacles or in canalizing terrain. See ATP 3-21.50 for additional information. Water obstacles. Evidence of groundwater, such as the presence of springs, pools, or plant growth along planned cross-country routes, presents problems in the movement of soldiers. Water obstacles generally are associated with valleys or lowlands. However, side hill bogs and ridgeline swampy ground may appear where groundwater emerges. For planning purposes, consider these barriers as seasonal, although seasonal conditions affect them as the water table rises or falls. Timely estimation of the sizes and characteristics of obstacles through map study, reconnaissance, surveillance, and intelligence operation aids in determining amount and type of added equipment needed to facilitate passage of a column. Probable delays and adjustments in schedule to avoid congestion. Advisability of using an alternate route to bypass obstacles. Swamps, bogs, and mud. Swamps, bogs, and mud caused by water tables close to top of the ground should be avoided by all marches. Surface crust may appear dry and covered with vegetation, but breakthroughs may result in soldiers becoming stuck. Depth of soft mud below the surface is extremely difficult to determine. Depth may vary in the same swamp from 1 to 2 feet. When it is necessary to cross such barriers, make provisions to bridge surfaces by suitable reinforcement means such as mats, brush, or special flotation materials. By increasing flotation and avoiding concentrated loads, soldiers may cross otherwise impassable barriers without undue loss or delay. If support of tactical operations requires movement over large marshes or swamps, assistance from engineer personnel and equipment may be available. Ditches and streams. Drainage ditches and canals, gullies and ravines, and streams and rivers present obstacles to foot movement, especially if obstacles are large and movement is open to enemy action. Map study, reconnaissance, surveillance, and intelligence operations may supply all information necessary to planning personnel. When in doubt about the ease of crossing an obstacle, request engineer reconnaissance. Engineers can determine what must be done to make the crossing. Small ditches, gullies, and streams do not cause serious delays, and approach and passage at reduced speeds require control to avoid congestion. Canals, ravines, and rivers present serious obstacles to foot movement and require assistance for crossing. Bridges and fords offer likely targets for enemy artillery, sniper, ambush, and improvised explosive device, IED, activities. Therefore, no movement should be made without provision for changes in plans dictated by current intelligence. In general, canals, ravines, and river crossings of selected routes require added preparation by planners. Planners do this to avoid congestion in critical areas, arrange for construction at crossing sites, Give adequate instructions to personnel to ensure proper conduct of missions. Note, with proper training, a unit can emplace a rope bridge to cross a small water obstacle or other small gap. See TC3-21.76. Desert areas. Movement planning for desert areas involves examining influences of climate and terrain on movement. Planners at all levels must be familiar with capabilities and limitations of soldiers and equipment. Make necessary changes to organization, training, and equipment as early as possible. When utilized, select vehicles suitable for local climate and terrain. This ensures maximum mobility and lessens excessive supply and evacuation requirements of vehicles themselves. Foot movement in desert areas is difficult due to the terrain and tactical situation. Dispersion increases to achieve some degree of tactical security, which expands lengths of formations. Experience with time and space schedules developed for other types of terrain may not be helpful. Routes must be general rather than specific. Point-to-point distances may be increased by unexpected obstacles. Column control normally is exercised from within the column by radio, command and control system, or visual signals. Supply and evacuation movements in deserts usually involve greater distances. Because of force dispersion due to terrain, greater volumes of supplies and support may be required in desert operations. See ATP 3-90.99 for additional information. Jungle or heavily forested areas. Planning for movements in jungles or heavily forested areas requires early consideration of climate and terrain. Anticipate needing additional personnel and equipment to give timely support to movements. Distances involved may be comparatively short, and foot speeds usually are reduced. Allowances must be made for route construction and clearance. Supply and evacuation in jungle operations should be coordinated closely. Making maximum use of terrain to reduce traffic is a key factor. Tropical conditions require increased protection for supplies against effects of rain, high humidity, and solar heat. See ATP 3-90.98 for additional information. Arctic areas and northern temperate zone. Planning for movements in Arctic areas and northern temperate zones is based on thorough familiarity with local weather and terrain. Movement plans must account for maximum severity of seasonal weather and remain flexible to sudden weather changes. Sudden rise in temperature accompanied by warm rain turns trafficable snow into mud and slush. Cold temperatures, even though above freezing, cause great discomfort to personnel. Midwinter thaws are often followed by sub-zero temperatures, creating deep frozen ruts and ice. If vehicles are attached, snow and ice accumulation may bind moving parts and wheels and lead to accidents. Sudden changes in weather often have detrimental effects on vehicle transport operations. Advanced planning and preparation must include winterizing vehicles to meet severe weather conditions when applicable, instructing personnel in winter hygiene and first aid, issuing suitable cold weather clothing and equipment, requesting engineer personnel and equipment when necessary for expediting movement. Route selection should be based on data resulting from route and area reconnaissance. Alternate routes should be used to take advantage of changes in trafficability due to weather. Despite reduced pace, column formations normally are open due to intervals required for increased distances. During periods of low visibility, columns close up to maintain control. Schedule frequent halts to allow soldiers to rest and adjust their loads. See ATP 3-21.50 for additional information. Urban areas. Urban areas all over the world share many general characteristics. These characteristics include dense city centers, compartmentalization, sectionalism, infrastructure, mass transportation lines, varied street patterns, and continual modernization. Central to these characteristics is population. Large urban areas are often composed of more than one municipality, and large municipalities often have subordinate political units. Units should identify and consider the boundaries of these political units during planning on a case-by-case basis. Commanders and staffs analyze civil considerations, see ATP 2-01.3, in terms of the categories of areas, structures, capabilities, organizations, people, and events, ASCOPE. These characteristics easily align with an urban area's three main components of terrain, society, and infrastructure. And like them, they are overlapped and interdependent. See HTTP/3-06.11 for additional information. Note, subsurface areas, also known as subterranean, include underground garages, passages, subway lines, utility tunnels, sewers, and storm drains. Although these areas allow for tactical movement, a commander will generally not conduct a foot march in these areas. See ATP 3-21.51 for additional information. March distance, rate, and time. Basic factors of march distance, rate, and time transform into movement formulas. Formulas are then applied to known data to obtain information needed to prepare a time schedule. The time schedule is used to regulate departures and arrivals of march elements. The march rate is the physical speed at which a march unit is moving at a given time and differs from the rate of march, that is, the average march rate over time to include rest. For example, a march unit conducting a dismounted march on roads in daylight can reasonably expect to maintain a march rate of 106 steps per minute with a 30-inch stride with a 10-minute rest every hour. This results in a march rate of 4.8 kilometers per hour, but an overall rate of march of 4 kilometers per hour. Relationships between time and distance are the basis for march planning. Planners determine how far columns should travel, distance, and how long it takes to make the move, time. They must know the space, length of column, columns occupy on the route. They include in their computations safety factors of distance, road gap, or time, time gap, separating march columns and their elements. Each term used for distance has its corresponding term for time. The length of a column in kilometers has an equivalent travel time in minutes. Road distance in kilometers or miles has a corresponding time distance. March rates under diverse conditions. Soldiers can only move as quickly as their lungs and legs allow. A trained, conditioned, and acclimatized soldier often has endurance and moves efficiently. Rest, good nutrition and hydration, conditioning, acclimatization, proper training, and will are vital. Terrain, weather, and light conditions affect movement rates. Movement rates should be relative to conditions. The more adverse the conditions, the slower the pace should be. Moving too quickly, even under ideal conditions, can produce early fatigue, require frequent rest halts, and result in time loss. Movement rates, coupled with proper soldier spacing, should be adjusted to prevent an accordion effect during movement in adverse terrain. Spacing between soldiers largely depends on the terrain, weather, and visibility. In adverse terrain, a slow, steady pace is preferred to rapid movement with frequent halts. Note, see ATP 3-21.50 for information on dismounted movement rates for mountain environments. See ATP 3-90.98 for information on dismounted movement rates for jungle environments. Minimizing soldier fatigue. To help minimize soldier fatigue and ensure efficiency, the following should be considered during movement rate evaluation. When traveling at a moderate pace, the need for rest halts can decrease, and the chances of personnel overheating are less than traveling at a high rate. Minimization of halts enables units to cover given distances in minimal time. An adjustment halt should be taken during the first half hour of movement. Soldiers can loosen or tighten boot laces as needed, adjust packs, and add or remove layers of clothing as appropriate. Short rest halts may be taken every 1 to 1.5 hours. If possible, soldiers should lean against a tree, rock, or hillside to relieve their shoulders of pack weight, breathe deeply, hydrate, and snack on food. Halts should be short to avoid muscles stiffening. Take rests on level ground, if possible, and avoid steep inclines. Longer rest halts may be taken later in the march if necessary due to fatigue or mission requirements. At these halts, soldiers may need to put on additional clothing to avoid becoming chilled. It is much easier to keep a warm body warm than to warm up a cold body. After a climb, soldiers need a good rest to revive tired muscles. Use rest stops for steep slopes, snowfields, and higher elevations. Rest stops help control the pace and limits fatigue by giving lungs and legs a moment to recuperate between stops. Maintain a slow and rhythmic pace. Soldiers should employ proper walking techniques and pause briefly after each step forward, relaxing muscles of the forward leg while resting their entire body weight on the rear leg. The rear leg should be kept straight with the knee locked so the bone, not muscle, supports the weight. After relaxing the forward leg, soldiers should scan their surroundings and ensure they focus on maintaining alertness and not just traversing terrain. Soldiers should synchronize their breathing with each rest step. The number of breaths per step changes depending upon the difficulty of the climb. Steeper slopes or higher elevations may require several breaths per step. It is especially important to breathe deeply when air thins at higher altitude, using the pressure breathing technique. Soldiers should exhale strongly, enabling an easier, deeper inhale. This slow, steady, halting rest step is more efficient than spurts of speed, which are rapidly exhausting and requires longer recovery. Straggler control. Stragglers who cannot meet or maintain the pace set for the foot march are the responsibility of their immediate chains of command. Fire team leaders, squad leaders, and ultimately the platoon sergeant must ensure soldiers are linked up with the straggler control party at the rear of the march column. Information concerning the number of soldiers who fall out, their standard name lines, and medical disposition must be relayed through the chain of command to maintain accountability of personnel and equipment at all times. Note: soldiers who fall out and are carrying mission essential equipment must transfer equipment to other soldiers in the unit continuing the march according to unit SOPs. Distance factors: dismounted or mounted marches. Battalions normally are organized into company-sized march units to facilitate control and maintain unit integrity. Normal march formation is a column of twos. Normal distance is 2 to 5 meters between soldiers, 1 to 3 meters at night, 50 meters between platoons, 25 meters at night, and 100 meters between companies, 50 meters at night. Vehicle or individual distance is the space between two consecutive vehicles or individuals of an organized element of a column. Column gap is the space between two organized elements following each other on the same exact route. It can be calculated in units of length or time as measured from the rear of one element to the front of following elements. Traffic density of attached vehicles is the average number of vehicles occupying 1 mile, 1 kilometer of road space, expressed in vehicles per mile or vehicles per kilometer. The length of a column is the length of roadway occupied by a column to include gaps in the column measured from front to rear. Road gap is the distance between two march elements. It is the length aspect of column gap. Since it is a more significant factor when columns are moving than when they are halted, road gap becomes factors of time rather than distance. Rate factor. Speed indicates the actual rate of speed of a dismounted march or mounted march column. It is gauged at a given moment by the relationship between time and distance for the dismounted column, or as shown on the speedometer in kilometers per hour or miles per hour for the mounted column. Pace is the regulated speed of a column or element that is established by a soldier or a lead vehicle in the lead element to maintain the prescribed average speed. For foot marches, the normal pace is 30 inches at a cadence of 106 steps per minute. Commanders consider all factors affecting marches and select a rate placing their units at their destinations in the shortest time and in combat-ready condition. Unit SOPs usually state the rate for marches on roads and cross-country, over normal terrain, and during day or night. Column commanders modify the rate to suit their needs, which varies greatly in mountain, jungle, desert, or Arctic areas. Rates of march are usually prescribed for normal terrain. Dismounted marches conducted in mountainous, jungle, desert, or Arctic areas are characterized by increased physical effort of the individual soldier, decreased soldier's load, increased potential for injury. Time factor. Time measurement includes the total time needed for units to complete marching or to pass designated points along designated routes. Time usually is measured in minutes or hours. Arrival time is when the head column arrives at a designated point or line. Clearance time is when the trail of a column passes a designated point or line. Completion time is when the trail of a column passes the RP. Pass time is the actual time between the moment the first element passes a given point and the moment the last element passes the same point. Road clearance time is the total time required for a column to travel over and clear a section of road. Road clearance time equals time distance plus column pass time. Time distance is the time required to move from one point to another at a given rate of march. It normally represents movement of the head of the column from SP to RP. Time gap is the time measured between the rear and front of successive elements moving past a given point. It is a time aspect of column gap or conversion of road gap to time. There are no prescribed time gaps. Gaps depend on the size of serials and march units, time available for movement, and tactics required for protection against air attack and sea burn threats and hazards. March computations. Before issuing the movement order or op ord, commanders must compute the required time and space measurements to prepare a road movement table, see Appendix B, or schedule. Distance, rate, and time are factors for march computations. During computation, if two factors are known, the third can be determined easily by dividing or multiplying one known factor by the other. Distance is determined by multiplying rate by time. Rate is determined by dividing distance by time. Time is determined by dividing distance by rate. Note, march planners must determine time distance, pass time, arrival time, and completion time. Time distance. Time distance is determined by dividing distance being traveled by rate of march. Time distance does not include the time for long delays or extended scheduled halts. Time distance table is a valuable source for march planners. It provides a list of factors used to calculate the time required to travel certain distances at specified speeds, either by foot or on vehicle. Travel rates are expressed in foot or vehicle speeds and corresponding rates of march. Travel factors are derived from the rate of march, which includes time for short periodic halts and other minor delays that could occur. Pass time. Length of column is used to determine pass time of a column and includes two parts: space occupied by the soldier alone, including distance between soldiers and sum of distances between elements of the foot column or column gaps. Total length of column is the sum of two parts. Length of column is determined by multiplying number of soldiers by the appropriate factor. Listeners should refer to Chapter 1 of the printed version of ATP 3-21.18 for a list of the factors. Total length does not include the distances between units. Total distance or column gaps between units is obtained by determining the number of serial distances, total serials minus 1. Determining the number of march unit distances, total march units minus 1 minus the number of serial distances. Multiplying the number of distances obtained by length in meters between the respective units. Add the results. Based upon previous movements, march units accumulate past data to facilitate march planning. Accumulated data include approximate pass times for various elements. Units use these data rather than computing the data each time a march is scheduled. Data tables reduce time required to complete the computation phase of march planning. Appropriate information is integrated into the unit's SOP. Critical information. Critical information used in movement formulas includes the SP and RP for the proposed tactical march. The commander directing a tactical march often uses a strip map or overlay to graphically depict critical information about the route to subordinates. Start point. SPs provide all units of the march column or formation with a common point for starting their movement. When units use more than one route, each route has its own SP. The SP is a place along the route of march easily recognizable on the map and ground, such as a road intersection. SP should not be in a defile, on a hill, or on a sharp curve. SP should be far enough away from assembly areas to allow units to organize and move at the prescribed rate and intervals when reached. No elements of a march column or formation should be required to march to the rear of or through another unit to reach the SP. Link up. A link up is a meeting of friendly ground forces, which occurs in a variety of circumstances, ADP 3-90. A link up point should be an easily identifiable point on the ground that offers cover and concealment. The commander may issue instructions concerning personnel or vehicles that do not march with the unit. For example, instructions on link up after the march. See ATP 3-21.20 and ATP 3-21.10 for additional information. Release point. RPs provide all units of the march column or formation with a common point for release or reverting to control of their parent units. RP should be on the route of march and be easily recognizable on the map and ground. Units do not stay at the RP. Guides meet units arriving at the RP and lead them to new areas according to the movement order or op-ord, or units released to continue follow-on operations. Multiple routes and cross-country movement enable units to disperse rapidly. When selecting a RP, units should avoid hills, defiles, and sharp curves along the route. Units must not countermarch or pass through other units to reach their new positions. Strip maps and overlays. Strip maps and overlays depict critical information about the route. They are detailed, but not cluttered with unreadable and unnecessary information. Both show the route over which the march travels. A strip map is not drawn to scale and should indicate this on the face of the map. Examples of information shown include route data, route numbers, major intersections, and distance between points. Whenever possible, insets or separate strip maps should show routes through metropolitan areas or entrances into rest halts and refueling as required sites. Control measures, generally specific to an overlay, may include boundaries, phase lines, and assembly areas. Movement control data. Arrival and departure times at the SP, CP, RP, country, province, or territorial boundaries or lines, and all halts. Times must coincide with the movement order or op-ord. Sustainment support data. Locations of all logistical support facilities and points for requesting or obtaining maintenance support and tactical combat casualty care, respectively. Additional information shown on a strip map or overlay generally includes CPs on routes are points used for reference in providing instructions, or places where timing might be critical. A route reconnaissance report or map study provides march planners with information to designate CPs along routes of march and distances from one CP to another. CPs are always identified and numbered consecutively. Once identified, guides and signs usually are sufficient. Leaders may be present at passing points. Distance between CPs are determined and listed on the strip map. In most parts of the world, distances are measured in kilometers. Rest areas provide rest, messing, refueling, inspection, and maintenance, and schedule adjustment while allowing other traffic to pass. Elements halt for 15 minutes during the first hour and 10 minutes every 50 minutes thereafter. Long halts are identified for dining, refueling, and assembly area activities. Every effort should be made to ensure messing, refueling, and maintenance halts coincide. Halt areas must be clearly identified. Major cities and towns serve as valuable reference points, since cities and towns indicate areas of heavy population concentrations. If possible, cities and towns should be bypassed to avoid congestion or choke points. North orientation, commonly referred to as the north-seeking arrow, is clearly depicted on the strip map, generally near the legend box. The northern orientation is a critical feature of the strip map and must align with any standard map. Section 4. Preparations for the march. Preparation is essential to effective execution of any movement plan. Preparing before actual events gives commanders, subordinate leaders, and soldiers clear ideas of what to expect. Applicable unit SOPs enable execution. This section addresses key preparation activities for the march. See ATP 3-21.20 and ATP 3-21.10 for additional information on preparation activities. March rehearsals. Well-planned rehearsals are critical aspects of preparation for march operations. With limited time, rehearsals must concentrate on battle drill reactions to likely enemy threats. Rehearsals ensure everyone in the march understands and demonstrates the ability to execute the plan and essential drills. Rehearsals instill confidence in all march participants and ensure they are fully prepared. Good rehearsals happen if they are planned and prepared carefully. Subordinate leaders supervise individual and crew drill rehearsals. Rehearsals are scheduled early in the preparation cycle, linking individual and crew rehearsals with PCCs and PCIs. Drills are practiced until individuals, teams, and crews can execute the drill to standard. On-the-spot corrections are made during rehearsals and throughout preparation activities. Pre-combat checks and pre-combat inspections. PCCs determine if equipment required for the march is available and serviceable. PCCs are effective if they are organized and conducted using an up-to-date checklist. Unit SOPs tailor these lists to specific missions. Follow-through is essential. Missing or unserviceable equipment must be reported, repaired, or exchanged immediately. These checks should be conducted soon after the warn order is issued. PCIs are a series of inspections scheduled early in the preparation sequence to ensure all PCCs have been performed properly, and all weapons, communications, vehicles, when required, and special and individual equipment are available and functioning. PCIs are effective when organized and conducted to exact standards by first-line supervisors, with systematic spot checks made by unit leaders. An effective technique is conducting full PCCs and PCIs during the March recovery period to ensure individuals and unit equipment are immediately ready for the next mission. See ATP 3-21.8 for additional information. Note, see Chapter 3, Section 2 for an example of a packing list checklist. Equipment maintenance. Commanders and subordinate leaders plan for regular maintenance halts throughout extended marches. Weapons, night vision devices, and optical equipment, and vehicles require regular maintenance to perform consistently throughout operations. Weapons and other equipment, including vehicles, can become not mission capable due to direct or indirect enemy fire, mines, IEDs, vehicle accidents, parts failures, and other unforeseen or unexpected events. Commanders and subordinate leaders enforce regular preventive maintenance checks and services, PMCS, of all unit equipment. PMCS are operator-level maintenance conducted before, during, and after operations. Comprehensive PMCS identifies actual and potential problems and ensures repairs are made promptly to minimize equipment downtime. DA Form 5988 ECHO, Equipment Maintenance and Inspection Worksheet, or the manual DA Form 2404, Equipment Inspection and Maintenance Worksheet, are used to record these deficiencies. Early detection and correction of these deficiencies can decrease the possibility of combat equipment breaking down during marches and prevent minor deficiencies from becoming major faults. Every individual is responsible to conduct PMCS. Subordinate leaders are responsible to ensure PMCS is conducted regularly and to standard before, during, and after the operations. See ATP 3-21.8 for additional information. Tier and prioritize resources and assets. Leaders must tier and prioritize the use of the resources and assets during the execution of the mission. Not all resources can support the dismounted unit during all portions of the movement. When prioritizing available assets, leaders should consider three factors: responsiveness, accuracy, and method. To better determine which assets to use, leaders should ask themselves a series of questions for each factor. Some example questions determined by responsiveness, accuracy, and method include: responsiveness. How quickly can the asset deliver the necessary supplies or equipment? In an emergency, what is the asset's response time? If it is an asset not habitually aligned to the unit, how does that impact its delivery timeline? Accuracy. How accurate do I need the delivery to be? Can I risk it being off target? Is there a high or consistent margin of error with the delivery? Will an off-target delivery risk mission accomplishment? Method. Will the delivery require me to deviate from my planned route and expend more effort? Will the unit compromise its position or lose the element of surprise due to the delivery? As the leader evaluates each load plan and its ability to manage the load, the leader continues to analyze the mission. The load management and analysis completed during the troops analysis portion of METTC contributes to the leader's overall tentative plan and provides vital information for planning routes, logistics, rates of march, and many other aspects of the operation. Managing the soldier's load is a critical leader task. The soldier's load is always METTC dependent and must be closely monitored. Soldiers cannot afford to carry unnecessary equipment into the battle. Not every contingency can be covered.